Hello, I'm Eric Ulrich.
And I'm Mick Mulroy.
Welcome to LoboCast, a product of the Lobo Institute. Our goal is to deliver a discussion on topics surrounding or related to conflict in ways that not only explore the issue, but explore potential solutions.
Lobo Institute is a conflict resolution consultancy based in Northwest Montana. We advise, consult, and teach on current and future conflicts, how to end those conflicts and prevent their recurrence, and how to help those most affected.
The views of the host and guest expressed in this LoboCast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Institute.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Over to this week's host.
My name is Walton Mulroy, and I am your host. Our guest today is Asad Hana. Thank you so much for your time, Asad.
Thank you, Walton. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right, Asad. So tell me a little about yourself. Like, what is your background, and how did you start working with the White Helmets?
It's a long story. So I studied commerce in Syria, and then I left Syria in the beginning of 2014 after 3 years of Syrian revolution, which broke out in 2011. When I went out of Syria, I started to continue my humanitarian work, human rights field, and journalism also. I was documenting the violence which was happening in Syria, publishing with some international media outlets. Afterward, I worked in that field for about 3 years. I'm still writing some articles now, time to time, when I have time. And I also worked after that. I worked with the Syrian opposition as political officer and advisor. I was also media advisor with the High Negotiation Committee in Geneva, which was responsible for negotiation according to the Security Council Resolution 2254, which started to draw peaceful exit and peaceful end for the Syrian crisis. In 2017, I saw the situation getting messed and we cannot do that much. So I wanted to do some more humanitarian work, more than political work. And that's why I joined the White Helmet. I joined the White Helmet in the capacity of media and advocacy manager. I was working in that field, in that position for almost a year. And then I started to do other work with them, which was the chairman's office manager. So I was kind of in leadership office, responsible for the communication with the donors and with partners and with other NGOs and people who we are in touch with. Also some work inside the White Helmet of coordination between the internal offices.
That sounds phenomenal. And so with your experience in the White Helmets, could you maybe tell viewers that may not know so much about the White Helmets how it was started and what exactly their mission was when it started and what it became today?
Yeah, the White Helmet started in, like, there is no exact date when it started because it was not an organization which, let's say, people decided to make in certain date. So the White Helmet effort started from the first minute when the Syrian regime started and his backers started to attack the civilians. So anyone who was working in his town, worried about the people and decided to help the civilians by his bare hands, digging for taking the people, for pulling the people out of the rubbles. And so that's how the White Helmet started, when people in different towns were doing the same kind of activities of pulling the people from under the rubbles, emergency ambulances and firefighting and all of that. But in 2014, there was a meeting for the leadership of the different groups from the different cities, and they met in Turkey and they decided to make a unity between their groups and to call themselves the Syrian Civil Defense. And then the people started to call them the White Helmets as a symbol of the hats and the helmets they are wearing.
So you're saying that when it started, it straight started from people seeing an issue, volunteering to help that issue, and then over time it became an organized organization.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the difference actually between the organizations and the White Helmet, because usually the organization starts from the top when there is someone or leader or manager wanted to create the organization for main for like some purposes or some activities, they decide to make this kind of organization, and then they hire the people. So it's like going from the top to the base. In the White Helmet, it was the opposite. It was the base first, the people who were working on the ground, and then they selected their leaders to organize their groups, and then the groups selected their board of directors, and then they selected the chairman. So that's why it's kind of different.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to hear about this organization that does nothing but help, and then they started from the bottom up. So essentially, it was the people that started it, and then they elected officials to make it an organization.
Exactly.
So what would you say in a sentence or two what the mission is? Like, just, this is what we do as the White Helmets.
The White Helmet, in main work, it's like their slogan. To save one soul is to save all the humanity. So it's saving souls. It's saving people. That's what they do in different ways. The White Helmet do a lot of activities like search and rescue operations, firefighting, community services, and emergency evacuation, camp services, and whatever the community need, they can provide with.
Amazing to hear. And their slogan just sums it up so perfectly. So as the White Helmets were developing and becoming this organization, what challenges did they have to overcome?
In one of the meetings, I think in New York, civil defense teams or firefighting team, I think. So there was a meeting with them and we were talking, and we were talking about the obstacles in the work field. And they were talking about the biggest obstacle for them is when the fire like flame everything and they cannot find the exit or something like that. So we were explaining about our obstacles that it's not like that. Our obstacles and our problems are the attacks. So whenever there is any place the White Helmet goes to and try to help people there, most of the time there is attacks by the airstrikes or the bombardment or like different kind of shelling by the Assad regime and the Russians, because they always try to kill as much as possible from the White Helmet to deny any efforts to save civilians. And they created something called the double taps, which is the attack and area, let's say a shelter, basement, or school, or residential area. And then they wait 10 to 15 minutes until the White Helmet comes to help people, and they attack the area again. That's just to kill the volunteers who are trying to help the people, to deny them and to stop them from helping the civilians. This is the biggest obstacle for the work of the White Helmet, is the continued attacks on the field workers, wherever they operate.
That is hard to hear. So knowing that, what are some of the lessons learned from that? So when you have... Now you have a regime that's now targeting a volunteer organization that is trying to help citizens, its people. Now, what are the lessons learned from that?
It's very important to know whenever you are in a crisis or whenever you are in a war zone or any dangerous area, you should think about the other people, not only about yourself. Whenever you are a survivor, you should think about how to save more people. It's not to run out. It's about saving the humanity whenever we can. I'm not saying everyone should do that. Anyone who have the ability to do that. Also, we should all know about resilience, about the work we should do for our community. Whenever there is a problem in the community, the first hand which will pull the community up is the hand of the people from that community. We should not wait anyone to come and help us. It will be great for anyone to help any community or any citizens or any people under difficult circumstances, but also we should work together to raise up and to help each other.
Such an excellent note. And then, so you have these volunteers. I know it's men, I know it's women from all walks of life and all these different places across Syria. So what kind of training do they have? Do when they first start, are they just, is it just what they learn while doing it? So what's the training looking like in the White Helmets?
Yeah, there is specific trainings for each team. As I said, as I mentioned, the tasks or the activities they do. So there is a training for each one. So nobody go to the field work, which is very, very dangerous place, before getting trained. for the women's centers, for the firefighting, for the search and rescue operations. And also, it's not only training, it's different stages of training. So there is a training, there is training of trainees, and there is also level one, level two, level three, and for each team according to what they will do on the field.
So you said there's different levels, level one, two, three, and so on. What, I guess I'm assuming that it would be based off experience and how long you've been a member of the White Helmets?
Exactly. So for if you are a volunteer going to operate in the search and rescue team, that means you should have the level one training, and then you will be able to do some basic work supporting those teams. And then if after a while you will have the level two training, which is maybe a more advanced level of working, so you will be able to respond to the attacks, to pull the people from under the rubble. And then there is the training of the leaders for those teams to be able to manage the team in field of work.
And just kind of based off my research, or just from my understanding, you go to Turkey to get that kind of additional training?
Yeah, at the very beginning of the creation of the White Helmet, there was some trainings in Turkey, only in Turkey. The training, because we had no centers inside Syria for doing the training. And then after we trained two or three teams, I don't remember exactly, we started training centers inside Syria for the White Helmet. So now we don't do any training out of the borders. We only train our volunteer. We used, actually, when I was with them, to train all the volunteers inside Syria. So there is now three training centers for the White Helmets.
So they brought back in the training centers to Syria itself.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where all the training is conducted. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that we kind of talked about the training, what is the common denominator between the persons willing to go into an area under attack and into a building that has just been struck by an airstrike? What is the common denominator between all these people that kind of brings them together to do such a dangerous job, task? But you know, it's phenomenal to hear about people just downright volunteering just to help others. So what kind of person does it take?
So the common thing and the shared thing between all the volunteers is the willing to help whatever you are doing, if it's search and rescue, as you say, or firefighting, or community services, or women's centers, why they are doing that in the most dangerous area in the world, let's say in Idlib now. And before that, in Aleppo, in Daraa, in Damascus countryside, in Damascus, in Homs, in my city. Why people to stay there? Like, we all know when there's attacks on some places, people run away from the attacked place. But with the White Helmet, the volunteers run into the attacked place. So it's just like going to the most dangerous point in the most dangerous place, in the most dangerous city. To do that, you need a big heart, you need a big will to help, and a high motivation by your feeling that I need to save those people. I need to save whoever inside. Even there was sometimes, I remember, there was rescue operations for cats and for animals because they were in a place which was attacked and the people were crying to get their cats out. So it's just the will of helping people or helping souls, helping spirits inside. Yeah, that's why they give it up.
If I had to dumb it down, the common denominator is selflessness. They just care
exactly
about others. Yeah, they just care so much about others that they're willing to put their own life on the line. So as you discussed before, you said that the airstrikes actually attack a building or an area and wait for the White Helmets to come help that area. The Assad regime has targeted the White Helmets. And why do you think that is?
Because they don't want any eyewitnesses. The White Helmet used to be the first eyewitnesses on all the crimes. Because as I said, when they run to the crime scenes, if we call it like that, when they attack it, when the regime or the Russians attack the hospital or shelter or whatever. So the White Helmet are the first people who arrive in this area as they are the first responders. So that make them sell a lot of crimes, document a lot of crimes by their cameras, which is fixed on their heads. here also we come to a very critical thing, which is the chemical attacks, which they witnessed, documented, and testified about. The regime wanted to kill the people who witnessed the violence and the crime and the war crimes, which was committed by his air forces and his army. That's why he wanted to stop them, to make all of that violence against them, to kill them and to stop them from operating.
So the objective is to minimize eyewitness reports of what is actually going on in the country.
Let's say to kill them. Yeah, to kill the eyewitnesses.
The Assad regime has also claimed that the White Helmets are working for the West. And is that another means to try and
actually
justify what they're doing? Or
actually, that's not just only the speech of the regime. It's the regime and the Russians and the Iranians. The problem with them, even, they don't have just one accusation. So they accuse the White Helmet volunteers that they work for the West. They accuse the White Helmet volunteers they work for Israel. They accuse them also of working with Al-Qaeda and working with ISIS and working with the moderate opposition even. So those combinations cannot come together. If you are working for Al-Qaeda, you cannot be working with Israel. Like, even if you are a spy for those people, you cannot be a spy for the other people. So it's just a propaganda to attack them even on the media and on the social media and to harm the reputation and to, we come to the same point of the eyewitnesses to accuse that they are not faithful and not honest eyewitnesses.
But it's an attempt by all the participants to just undermine and demean the White Helmets and their organization.
Yeah, and what they're trying to do. The one who's running this campaign are the Russians through like all the propaganda machine they do.
So it's Russia is playing more of a part of demeaning the White Helmets than the Assad regime.
Exactly.
And what can you elaborate on the current situation in Syria? So what's from 2011, I believe, is when this whole issue started to now, you know, 9 years later, what is the current situation looking like in Syria?
It's in like a short description, regime killing the civilians. That's it. We cannot make it different from that. Whatever happens, the regime brought the Iranians, brought the Russians, brought the Afghanis militias to stop the people from demanding their demonstrating for their freedom and for the rights and for the releasing of the detainees. And then the opposition, they started to attack the opposition on the ground. They started to attack the people, the areas which went out of their control by the airstrikes, and they killed the civilians. The civilians started to carry weapons to protect themselves. They created the Free Syrian Army as the Syrian Army started to split to two sides, one accepting to fight the civilians, one not. So they defected from the army, and then we had the Islamic groups and ISIS and Qaeda who also attacked and killed the civilians and fought and fought against the Syrian revolution. But whatever happens, whatever as overall situation, it's this kind of evil regime killing the civilians. We just saw that the Caesar photos, which is 55,000 photos for people killed by torturing in the Syrian regime detention places. So it's kind of evil regime killing civilians. That's all how I can describe it.
So if I asked you what would the biggest challenge in securing peace in Syria, what might that be? Because I know from my understanding, it is a very complex issue. So many participants in one place, and the whole situation is now, it's very confusing, to be quite honest. Even while looking at it and trying to study it, it is a very complex issue.
Yeah,
so what would be the biggest challenge in securing peace in Syria?
The biggest challenge is that there is no one want to make the peace in Syria, because there is a very clear roadmap. There is very clear resolution by the Security Council called 2254. It drew how the peace in Syria should happen by political change in the regime, and then constitutional committee to write a new constitution, and then elections. So if we don't do that, the problem is nobody is working on implementing that resolution, because the Syrian regime and the Russians are not engaged in the peaceful negotiation in Geneva. The problem here that the International Committee is not making enough pressure in the Syrian regime and the Russian side, who are blocking any even humanitarian resolution in the Security Council by their veto. They stopped too many resolutions of just sending the humanitarian aid to the Syrian people. The problem is there is not enough pressure on the regime and his backers to engage in the implementation of the 2254 resolution.
The more I look into it, the more I'm confused, because it's been going on for years, you know, and it just seems to be, to me, you have so many alliances and influence and proxies, and it just has come to a compilation that it's just, the result is that it's not looking good. I mean, it's not looking, there's no near-sighted peace or resolution anytime soon. So the issue is unfortunately looking like it's going to be long-lasting.
Yeah, you're very right, Walton. But as we say, as there is no work from the international community in the political transition in Syria, according to 2254, there will be no peace. The biggest problem now is there's some countries thinking about accepting the current regime with some changes. It's like saying, I will accept Hitler to control the European Union if he doesn't use the bombardment after all what he did, or if he doesn't use the gas after all what he did. So that's not acceptable. There is a criminal in the top of country in Syria. They all should be set accountable. And you cannot compromise, you cannot work with them, you cannot accept dealing or doing any relation with Syria as long as they are there. That's what the international community should understand.
And it makes it difficult in the international community that it has Russia's backing.
Yeah, but if Russia backed any criminal, that doesn't make the criminal as an angel. That's what they should understand. It's not that who own the veto or whoever coordinates or make alliance with the people, with the one who has the veto of the Security Council, that means they can do whatever they want. If the world will accept this kind of behavior, that will be a mess. That any country who has a veto or who has strong relation with the veto countries, the five countries, then they can kill their own people or kill even other countries. So that's not acceptable.
But involving other countries, from my understanding, it appears that the White Helmets are looking to expand outside of Syria?
Not expand in the meaning of the expand the nation, but it's just if there is any help, can the White Helmets want to, can help any other place, they will be happy to do that. That's according to my knowledge until March 2020. That was my last day with them. According to that time, there was no offices or no, let's say, operations for the White Helmet in any other country out of Syria.
So by expanding, they're not looking to open up offices and organizations outside the country. Are they just looking for global involvement or investments or acknowledgement, recognition from other countries on what they're trying to achieve or what they're trying to do?
No, there is offices out of Syria and out of Turkey also. But these offices is just to facilitate the work and the relation in the other countries who are supporting the White Helmet, but not for operating.
Okay, so that makes more sense. So it's just more
like representatives for the
representation. For the
yeah.
Okay, that's a good note. Also, for people who may listen to this and who are trying to get involved in global issues in places like Syria, where it's just such a complex, devastating issue where civilians are losing their lives. Can you explain what people could do if they wanted to get involved?
Syria is a very dangerous place to go to, so I will not say to anyone from any other country to go to Syria to work there, because it's very dangerous, even on the Syrians themselves, so it's more dangerous also for the foreigners to go there. But always for the help, they can see how they can help. There's a lot of people in the camps looking for any help. There is about a million Syrian IDPs just living in the tents, getting under the sun in the summer and under the flooding in the winter. They just left their homes with their clothes. There's a lot of good organizations, volunteers, who your support to them, your contribution to them, can make a big difference of maybe supporting the poor families And the most important thing is to be the voiceless of the people who cannot speak up, to speak on behalf of them. If you have any platform, if you have any reach to any place to speak and to support the peace in Syria, to support the efforts to make the peace in Syria, and to push your governments to do something to save more lives and to save the Syrian people.
You're saying that the best way to get involved or to help would be raising awareness?
Exactly.
All right. Well, Asad, that's all I have for you today. I just wanted to take a moment to thank you. GlobalCast really appreciates your time, and we couldn't thank you enough. Raising the awareness like this on groups and organizations such as the White Helmets is something that needs to be done. And we just wanted to say thank you for your time.
Thank you, Walton, so much. Also, let me thank you and all the team in Lobo for the amazing work you are doing in raising awareness and supporting the children to have a normal life, supporting the people that in different ways in the difficult circumstances, countries of living. So also thank you from my knowledge on your work experience.